The PDS Professional Podcast Series is brought to you by the Princeton Day School Alumni Board. The objective is to share the professional experience of a wide variety of PDS alumni through a series of podcast interviews. The interviews are one-on-one led by a member of the Professional Development Committee and cover a variety of topics including day-in-the-life descriptions, career path tips, work-life balance, and networking.
All right, Eric. Thanks for spending some time with me. Sorry for the audience for the clunkiness of the beginning of this, but technology is a wonderful thing. This is Scott Feldman. I graduated from PDS in 1993. I am speaking today to Eric Dunn, who is the CEO of Quicken. He's going to give us his background in a second. Eric, what year did you graduate from PDS?
You know, I actually went to Exeter for my last 2 years. I was class of 1975, so I actually graduated from Exeter. But I do have good PDS cred. I was in third grade in 1965 when the school first opened its doors, combining PCD and Miss Fine School with Mrs. Fritch. And so I was in third, fourth, skipped, was abroad in the fifth grade, but sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth grade. Including those wonderful years when we had to wear a tie. You probably didn't have to wear a tie.
No.
So that's my PDS background.
Okay, that's perfect. And so you definitely qualify. Thank you for that. So the idea of these interviews is that we're spending time with folks like us who have been in the workforce for a while in a particular field, and trying to memorialize a discussion around how you got into your profession, why do you think you got into it, what have been the successes and the challenges throughout your career. And so let's chat a little bit about what you do and what your current job is and how you found your way there. So tell us about your current job at Quicken today.
So I'm the CEO of Quicken Incorporated, not to be confused with our third cousins, Quicken Loans in the Midwest. We're about a $100 million software company that does really sort of accounting software for individuals, not for businesses, personal finance software, as it's sometimes called. We're right in the heart of Silicon Valley with a couple of remote locations, and we were created as a spinoff from a better-known company, Intuit, just over a year ago.
Okay, and before you took the job as CEO of Quicken, what were you doing?
I had a long career in two segments at Intuit, the previous owner of this company. I joined Intuit in 1986 with an unusual role as both a C language programmer, and chief financial officer. And I did those two jobs side by side right up through the time Intuit went public in 1993. I was still CFO, hadn't been allowed to code for a couple of years, unfortunately. And then I kind of rounded out my first stint at Intuit in 2000 as chief technology officer. Combining CTO and CFO in a public company is not completely unique. I found one other person who's done it, but a relatively unusual combination. Then I had 10 years as an investor, first an angel investor and then a venture investor in 2000 to 2010. Returned to Intuit in 2010. And was a senior vice president, general manager of a small business payments division for about 5 or 6 years until the spinoff of this original software business was announced. And I raised my hand and said, "I'd like to go do that. Perhaps I could be the CEO of that in post Intuit life." And that's what happened.
Got it. So 1986, you joined Intuit. That was about 10 years after you had graduated from high school, probably about 5-6 years after you graduated from college. So how did you find your way to Intuit? What happened? Most of our audience are high school grads and in college and maybe some college grads. So I think people are curious to understand how you went from education and getting your degree to the 5 years in between and what how you found your way into it.
So really the question probably that's most relevant is how I found my way into the software industry, which turned out to be, a great segment to be involved with during, my adult life. And, some of that actually started at PDS. We had our first PDP-8 starting in about 1971, I would say. And I wasn't one of the people who spent all of his free time in the computer room, as it was then. But you know, that was certainly my introduction to computer science. And I picked that up again when I was in college. And although I studied physics as an undergraduate, you know, along the way, you know, even in the 70s, you had to write software, in my case in Fortran, you know, in order to do some types of the work that was required in physics. And I got increasingly interested in software, took a couple of computer science courses, applied math as they were then called. And I would say I was quite interested in computer software by the time I graduated from college in 1979. And my first job actually was with IBM in software development. I did that for a couple of years. And then I kind of course corrected back to more of a business orientation by going to Harvard Business School in 1981. So I had, you know, some time with the software business at the beginning of one at IBM, went to business school, and then I came out the other end of business school and went to one of the well-known management consulting firms of the time, Banning Company, and spent 3 years there doing kind of general purpose management consulting, but with a couple of things that were formative for me. One was I continued to kind of be an amateur software developer. I tried to create a, you know, program I could sell myself. I talked to some of the partners about, you know, would they fund me if I started a software company? So I had the bug. And secondly, one of my key clients when I was at Bain, although they weren't in the software business, they were a tech company, about a $50 million disk and disk controller company in Southern California. And I spent a lot of time with them. And I thought that their life, you know, living the excitement of a tech company in the rapidly growing, you know, computing industry and personal computer industry at that time was a lot more exciting than what I was doing at Banning Company. And so I was sort of twice bitten by the entrepreneurial bug. And when I was introduced to Intuit's founder, Scott Cook, in 1985 or 1986, my mind immediately started to run towards, you know, maybe I should, you know, switch from big company management consulting, which is what I'd been doing at Bain, to taking a chance on this tiny company, four employees at the time I joined it, that was doing something that was really interesting to me. Software, which, you know, I'd already had an interest in, and, you know, being part of the rapidly growing personal technology industry, and I think there was, even a sense then, you know, right place, right time to be getting involved. So that's how it started.
Perfect. So I think a lot of people wonder, technology has become a huge part of our economy, and a lot of kids graduating from PDS and then beyond in college are getting into the field. But a lot of folks who haven't worked in it really wonder, what exactly do you do every day? I mean, not only as a CEO of Quicken now, but and in prior roles at Intuit and others, but, you know, as a person who's in the software field, what do you do? How would you best describe your day to day?
So let me describe my day to day, and then if you like, you know, I could, you know, describe the day to day of some of the entry level employees, which might also be interesting to, you know, the PDS audience. So my job is, you know, probably like everyone on the planet, about 25% of my job is email, right? Reading and replying to email. I mean, that's what we do at work everywhere on the planet, as far as I know. But, you know, leaving that aside, the next biggest component is one-on-one meetings. So I have individual meetings with the seven people who report to me directly every week. And then we're a fairly small company with only about 120 employees. So I meet with everybody in the company every 6 months. So, you know, I have, you know, visibility on a rotating basis to the whole company, you know, try to focus on meeting the new employees. And so part of that is me kind of broadcasting, you know, company values and making sure people understand, you know, what we're trying to do as a business. But part of it is just, you know, staying in touch with what's going on in the business day to day. And, you know, many, many times, you know, I'll meet with one of my team members and, you know, on the heels of having met with somebody, you know, on his team or her team, I say, what about this issue? Should we talk about that? So I think that's the, you know, that's the most valuable thing that I do is, you know, have one-on-one meetings. Group meetings, and I did try to tabulate this a little bit, probably about 20% of my time And I would contrast that with Intuit. I would say at Intuit, I probably spent 50% of my time in multi-person meetings. And so one of the, you know, occasionally you hear about small companies being nimbler than large companies. And, you know, that's quite visible to me, you know, having been at an 8,000 employee company before being at this 120 person company. You know, I have a weekly staff meeting. We have something called business operations, which is an hour, which we do every week. But, you know, I tend not to have a lot of, you know, group meetings, which is fine with me. After those two categories, sort of email, one-on-one, and group meetings, there are a bunch of, you know, 5 to 10% things which are quite varied, which is one of the things I enjoy. There's probably about 5% of the time I spend interacting directly with customers. They seem to be pretty good at tracking me down and sending me emails or in some cases letters, which my assistant scans and then I read them digitally. And, you know, in some cases, you know, they're very specific problems with the software or the service or complaints about policy. Every now and then there's a nice attaboy and they say, you're doing a great job. And of course I treasure those. But, you know, a CEO of a company is not very insulated from customers in today's world. And particularly, you know, as part of our marketing campaigns, you know, the voice of me, the CEO, you know, does reach customers from time to time, though not, as you can imagine, with my regular email address attached to it. So that's, you know, that's one component. Writing, so I write, you know, some of it, I include kind of PowerPoint in writing, but getting my thoughts down, you know, in a document is probably another, you know, 5 or 10% of my time. There's a small amount of kind of travel and external facing stuff we do. You know, we don't have a huge PR footprint, but you know, there are some meetings with the press. And you know, last week I was in New York for an investment conference, unusual for our company, but you know, I do that kind of thing from time to time. I travel to our two other locations in Tucson and in Bangalore, India. You know, believe it or not, I actually spend a little bit of time writing code. So I talked the Windows team into letting me do a sub feature of a minor feature in the next version of our Quicken for Windows product. And, you know, I still remember how to write decent code in C. And that's actually one of the really fun things I get to do. And obviously I do that with, you know, judiciously, I think, and with moderation, I think. But, you know, it helps me to feel, you know, quite connected to the life our developers are living. So those are main ways I spend time here. I left off goofing around. I'm not 100% serious. There's clearly some wasted time. I do one thing that I didn't do when I was in my previous large company job, which is, you know, rather than call a meeting, I'll walk down the hall and grab people ad hoc and just have a, you know, 5 or 10 minute conversation, which is, you know, one of the delightful things you can do more easily in a company this size than in a larger company. So there's kind of problem solving, troubleshooting, kind of information collecting just by walking down the hall. So there's some time spent on that as well.
You mentioned a couple of things you really enjoy doing, like the coding and spontaneous meetings. What would you describe as your most the challenging parts of the job, or maybe the most challenging parts of the job for your company?
The most challenging part of my job has been some tough personnel decisions that I've made. And good news is, you know, those are now in the rearview mirror. But, you know, certainly over the last year, the hardest things I've had to do is essentially replace, you know, adequate but not outstanding performers with people who had the potential and indeed, you know, the realized potential to be outstanding performers. And so I think, you know, it's probably no surprise to anyone who's been in business that, you know, it's very tough to, you know, to ask people to leave who've, you know, done a good job, who've done an okay job and whose heart has been in it, but sometimes it's necessary for the, you know, for the health of the business. And so that's clearly the hardest thing I've had to do. I think as a company, the hardest thing we have to do is migrate a 30-year-old desktop value proposition to kind of a cloud mobile web value proposition. And we're well on the way in terms of what we can see, you know, and the technology we've built to accomplishing that. But in terms of what's visible to the customers, you know, they haven't really seen that yet. And so we have a lot more work to expose those capabilities to customers. And it's a huge change. And, you know, many companies, you know, I think have, you know, found it, you know, difficult and time consuming to evolve their business models, you know, from desktop to, you know, to cloud based. You know, Microsoft certainly is taking its time with Microsoft Office. And of course, our former owner Intuit, you know, had a fairly, you know, easy transition for TurboTax and a much slower, more protracted transition for QuickBooks, which has really been a 15 year migration for them. We're trying to do it all in about 3.
Got it. You talked about how you got into this business. So 2 questions there.
Yeah.
At what point in your life did you realize this? Because it's not typical, particularly now, but just even in the last 50 years, for someone to be at a company for as long as you were at Intuit, even though it was broken up into 2 pieces. You were there for a long tenure. And so it feels like you really knew what you wanted to do, and you were there for a long time, and you stayed committed to it. But at what point did you realize that you wanted to be in tech? And part 2 of the question is, do you feel like the path that you took that got you there, you graduated from high school, had a job for a couple of years, did your business school degree, and then another job eventually led you to the right path. Is that a good path today for a young person if they want to get into technology?
Okay, so I heard 2 questions. One is, when did I sort of know that this, you know, felt right? And the other is that a path that I would recommend to others, perhaps, you know, PDS high school students? So I think I knew by the mid-80s that my passion was in computer software. I hung out with the founders of Intuit in 1985, 1986, saw what they're doing, and I kind of knew then this is what I wanted to do. Now, the question was whether what I wanted to do was going to be enough to, you know, put food on the table for my family. And that was highly in doubt, you know, for a considerable period of time. I believe my salary, I took like a 50% salary cut to $40,000, you know, when I left Bain & Company to work at Intuit. And it wasn't completely clear that, you know, the company would be able to continue to pay even that. I think I told my wife there is at least a 1/3 chance the company would be bankrupt within a year. So the big question was not whether this is what I wanted to do, but whether what I wanted to do, you know, was, you know, enough to, you know, keep us going. And so, and the, you know, the happy outcome for me was, you know, that there was, you know, this coincidence that the company I enjoyed working for actually met because of this. So that's when I knew. The other question you asked is, would I recommend a similar course to kind of today's students, which is, you know, a relevant question I have for me, certainly with a daughter who's halfway through college and a son who's a recent graduate. And I think, you know, generally speaking, the combination of some technical background as an undergraduate, a business school degree, and a couple of years working for a high-tech company, which is what IBM was in the 70s, though you probably wouldn't call it one today, is, you know, not a bad starting point for a career today. So, you know, no regrets and no reason not to recommend, you know, that to, you know, to students today. I think the thing that's hard for me to recommend is, you know, how do you get in the right place in the right time? And, you know, I was very fortunate, you know, to land in Silicon Valley at a time when it was turning from a hardware to a software business. Silicon Valley, if you recall, is named for silicon, right? It was a chip place in the late 60s and the 70s, and then it really evolved into the software valley, and then more recently, of course, you know, the cloud valley or whatever of the current decade. But, you know, I arrived interested in software at the time it was sort of, that was becoming kind of the economic driver for Silicon Valley. So, you know, yeah, that's my advice. Find the right place at the right time if you possibly can, but, you know, I can't predict that for you, so to some degree it'll be fortuitous. But certainly the combination of undergraduate background in a technology-related field and some business education, you know, equips you well for lots of different roles. And okay. By the way, I had a lot of different roles. So, I was a computer software engineer. I was a chief financial officer, took a company public, general manager, venture capital general partner. It didn't just line me up for one thing. It enabled me to do a number of things.
You've spent a long career doing this, and you now have the benefit of hindsight. If you weren't doing this, what do you think you'd be doing? Do you ever have not regrets, but look backs and say, maybe I could have gone down this path?
Well, I think if I hadn't, returned to Intuit in 2010, I'd probably be, semi-retired angel investor, gentleman farmer, that kind of stuff. But the real road not taken. Back in college when I applied to graduate school in computer science, and for some reason my teaching assistant never sent in my letter of recommendation to Cambridge University, and they sent two polite letters, and I nagged him twice, and he never came through. And so in the end, my plans to go to graduate school in computer science were, cut short. So I think it could easily have happened that I would have pursued an academic career. And, whether that would have been better, worse, or the same, it probably wouldn't have been the same, is hard to say. But, the way things, I certainly have no regrets about the random, deck of cards, hand of cards that I was dealt.
Great. Okay. Well, Eric, we wanted to spend this time and learn about a little bit about you and your background and how you got from PDS to the CEO of Quicken. Thank you for sharing all of that. And thank you for contributing back to PDS with some of your time here and your insights.
Yeah, no, PDS, as far as I know, continues to be a great school. I had a wonderful experience there, and I wish it well. So thank you for taking your time to, to ask me a few questions. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the PDS Professional Podcast Series. For more information on how to get involved with this project or with the Alumni Board in general, visit www.pds.org/alumni.